In just a minute, we'll have Oscar winner Susan Sarandon in studio. She's in the new live-action film version of Speed Racer. That film hits theaters today. But before we get into the new version of that film, let's take a quick look back at the classic 60s anime cartoon that inspired it. Here's part of a report by NPR's Elizabeth Blair.
Speed Racer had everything. A dad who built race cars, a nice mom who let his little brother keep a pet monkey, a cute girlfriend, and an unbelievably cool car.
These are the controls of the most powerful and amazing racing car in the world, the Mach 5.
Fans of the 1960s show will remember the Mach 5's all-important 7 buttons.
Control A releases powerful jacks to boost the car. Control B. Press this button and the Mach 5 sprouts special grip tires for traction over any kind of terrain.
And the cool factor of the car, I think, is part of the cool factor of anime.
Roland Keltz is the author of Japan America, How Japanese Pop Culture Has Invaded America. Speed Racer is anime. Keltz says those 7 buttons on Speed Racer's car back in the 60s are typical of anime.
There's a real emphasis on specific details and the correlation of devices or gadgets to something that actually happens.
Control G releases a homing robot from the front of the car. The homing robot can carry pictures or tape-recorded messages to whomever and wherever I want to send them.
Speed Racer was originally created in Japan by Tatsuo Yoshida with help from his 2 brothers in the 1960s. A distribution company in the U.S. bought the show and hired Peter Fernandez to adapt it for American audiences. He also worked on the Japanese anime shows Gigantor and Astro Boy. But he says Speed Racer was different.
The animation was much more realistic. The characters had a relationship that I had never seen before in any cartoon series. And it was all about cars.
Get away with them!
How can we stop them?
Pops, take the wheel.
No speed!
Now give me those plans!
Let me go! We'll crash!
Peter Fernandez says he wasn't given a lot of instruction on how to transform the show for American TV. The first thing he did was change the title. The Japanese version was called Mach Go Go Go. So Fernandez came up with the name Speed Racer.
Here comes Speed Racer. He's a demon on wheels. He's a demon and he's gonna be chasing after someone.
The new Speed Racer movie was directed by the Wachowski brothers, who almost never give interviews. Fans of the original might be a little overwhelmed by the new Speed Racer movie. The racetracks, the gadgets, the villains, the speed, everything about it is much more intense than that quaint little anime cartoon from the 1960s.
That's NPR's Elizabeth Blair, and take it from someone who's seen the film on an IMAX screen, she is right. The new Speed Racer movie is much more intense than the original. If the original Speed Racer was a lollipop, the current Speed Racer is directed by the Wachowski brothers of Matrix fame, is a chocolate-covered Twinkie, deep-fried in Brando, and shot across the room into your mouth from an air cannon. So the kids will love it. Speed Racer is Emil Hirsch. His co-stars are Christina Ricci, and John Goodman is his dad, and Susan Sarandon as Mom Racer. Here's a clip from the trailer.
He's going to be very good.
No, he's going to be the best.
For my family, racing's everything.
I watch you do some of the things you do. You just take my breath away. I'm so proud to be your mom.
Racing's the only thing I know how to do, and I gotta do something.
I hate when trailers give away the whole plot. Yesterday, Oscar winner Susan Sarandon stopped by our studio to discuss the film, working with the Wachowski brothers and her ovaries. But we began by talking about the New York Rangers, who were recently eliminated from the NHL playoffs. Well, first off, condolences to the entire Sarandon-Robbins household for the Rangers' second-round loss.
Oh, yeah. Oh, they were close and yet so far.
I know. Every game was like that.
I know. I don't know if toward the end, you know, without Avery, they just didn't have that spark of fighting. They got so close. Yeah, we're just coming out of our funk.
Well, for someone who's such an idealist, what do you think of Sean Avery? He does fight a little dirty, doesn't he? We're just talking about
politics. I thought
politics.
It is very creative.
That's true.
I mean, there wasn't a rule saying you couldn't do that until he did it.
Yeah.
You know, I thought that it was I thought it was really funny and crazy and okay.
Before,
it's not like hitting someone from behind without the puck on the, against the boards.
No,
it didn't cause pain. Bleeding on the ice. He was being a distraction. Aren't you supposed to do that?
He just turned around and waved his arms in front of the goalie.
I love him.
And so what do you think of Vose Motorsports? This is the Speed Racer segue.
Well, that was artful.
Artful, yeah.
Well, you know, one of the reasons that it interested me to be involved in this project, besides the fact that I think the Wachowskis are God and I love The Matrix so much, was the idea of the corporate takeover of sports, the conglomerates getting in everything. And in fact, that summer we had many, many scandals in the racing world.
Mm-hmm.
And but if you look around at what's happening to sports, it seems like it's almost impossible. And all the betting scandals and everything else that happens. So, you know, besides the corporate takeover of the media, you know, and sports, I just thought that that was a really interesting way to talk about it. And, of course, you can get into this movie without understanding that very complicated situation that's part of the plot there and just watch it in sheer action if you're younger. But that interested me. And then the fact that they were brave enough in the midst of this cacophony of sound and saturated color and races and everything to have space for the family. To have those moments, you just don't see that where not that there's been a movie like this, but a genre kind of like this. You don't see an attempt made to, you know, have a heartbeat in the middle of that. And I think that by the end, when you really have that kind of orgasmic race that happens at the end, one of the reasons this works is that you've seen all these different little moments that they've laid in there with the family.
So do you just make your peace with the fact that the vehicle for this criticism of corporatism and the corporate takeover of things that are pure is, you know, this huge Time Warner
summer blockbuster movie?
I mean, how else are you going to make a summer blockbuster except with a huge corporate media
entity?
Oh,
I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's anti-corporate, but it's
kind
owned
of
by
ironic,
a corporation.
Isn't it?
That would be one definition. Yeah.
Well, when Tim did Cradle Rock with Disney, there was the same kind of dynamic. I mean, there's no way to get around it, and certainly we need those big structures for some things, and it doesn't mean they all have to be completely corrupt, just like all Republicans aren't bad.
Name two that aren't.
I've met a few. Maybe none in the limelight, but then, you know, I'm not a huge fan of all Democrats either.
But I'm sure they side up to you and tell you what roles they liked, and for instance, and they win you over.
No, but I've had, they kiss my ass and then I love them. No.
No, I don't say you love them, but they have reason to reach out to you.
I've had conversations with very sincere people that are concerned, and, you know, the Republican thing. People always ask me, well, what would you think if your daughter dated one? Would I be upset?
Like they dated one, like they're the other.
I hear they're similar. Yeah, we've just become so polarized. But, you know, when you stop to listen, you find good people everywhere.
You know what I did? I started to look at all your movies starting in 1970 with Joe.
God.
And I started, there's a site that has the budgets or the estimated budgets. And I started adding up the budgets.
Numbers.
On through 1975, Rocky Horror, on through Atlantic City, 1980. And I think I got to the Dry White Season, which is around 1989, before I got to $100 million, which is the estimated budget for this movie. I don't know if that blows your mind or just my mind.
I only pay attention to what I'm getting paid. It doesn't really trickle down in any way. So
are they correlated?
Kind of know. No. Well, you know, I've done a lot of first director indie films, and I think you just have to choose with according to things that interest you. And some of the really big budget have not ended up being as successful as some of the kind of out-of-the-box things. So I've never – that's very OCD of you to be checking those numbers, I think. I really don't know. I have no idea because I just want to make sure, can I bring my dog? What was it during the school vacations? Where are we filming? You know, are they nice people? Will I have fun, basic, is the first thing. And then, of course, when the kids were little, I mostly worked during the summers. Or in New York, became a big selling point.
Brothers? The Wachowski brothers, I think, to outsiders are inscrutable.
I wish I had started being inscrutable like about 20 years ago. It's a very good tactic because everybody talks about you. And, you know, whenever you're doing press, it's like playing Russian roulette. The more interviews you do, one of them's bound to kill you out of context or something. So the Wachowskis have the perfect life because nothing personal, but if you didn't have to do press, it would. That's really what you get paid for.
Yeah.
Sure.
The
that's
actual
the, that's
filming.
The work. Yeah.
That's the work, yeah. You know. And I think also when you do something that's this out of the box and they feel so passionately about, and to have to talk about it kind of limits the experience. It's like explaining a joke.
Right.
The chances are it's not too funny by the end.
Yeah. What is the A.J. Liebling line? You could explain the joke, but it's like dissecting a butterfly. You might learn something, but you kill it in the process.
Yeah. I think they're really lucky that they are inscrutable.
What about with you? Were they as open as any other director? I mean, was the process
trying to figure out these guys? Every time you enter into a new film, you're landing on a new planet with a new vocabulary and, you know, people that you need to negotiate around and understand. And it was a humbling experience to work in something that you have to surrender to where, you know, you're a piece of this vision. As opposed to something that's much looser. But I thought if ever I was going to be a part of something that was like that, which I really hadn't done, then these were the guys to do it with because they are so out there. And I find they are so funny. And they definitely micromanage, and there are a lot of directors that work that way who are maybe not burdened with a vision the way these guys are.
So then do you begin to, or do you fight the idea that you're just like a prop? I mean, if they're not even going in for the close-up and you have something to say with
your emotions. No, I think that's when you
emotions.
Have to trust them. You have to trust them and say, well, it's about something bigger and give yourself over. The vision of it, the style of it is something so different and so huge. When I saw the little films that they gave me about the making of the movie and everything, I started to understand the scale in which I was existing even more than I did when we were there.
It's funny because there are a couple scenes where they do the Matrix shot, a special effects scene, and the guy's suspended in the air and the camera moves and you say to yourself, oh, I've seen this in so many movies. But wait a minute, they're allowed to do it. They invented this shot.
And also they're really, what's fun about them is besides the fact that they've crafted their life to be exactly what they want it to be, where they want to live, how they want to live it, and control over their product, they really have fun. So there are all kinds of funny little things in the film that they, like penguins walking across because they just like that, or they decided, oh, this window, I don't know, let's put a gigantic fish in that window, or they, you know, and they don't even do drugs, and it's probably the trippiest movie I've ever been in, and they're completely straight, you know, they're just these geeky guys. You know, when you're in a set that looks like that, and I mean, I came home and unpacked and found a bright yellow dress that I'd bought in Berlin. You know, they completely overtaken my aesthetic, and I was like, I think it was even polka dot. I was like, when would I wear this dress now?
It's like the guy you date at summer camp, and
you come back from a foreign country and with an aesthetic that you passed up until then. Definitely this world that we existed in for the whole summer.
There's something you said, you know, you do all these interviews and people know about your life. So you have a daughter and two sons. Is that right?
That's right.
I was looking over some of your past roles, more recent roles. It seems to me that you play a lot of mothers and a lot of mothers of sons.
You know, I think, first of all, there's a taboo about playing a mom. So it's a field where I could dominate because everybody doesn't want to go into momdom.
Why are you so secure with that?
I think that women who have children are very, very interesting, and I don't think I don't mind exploring bad moms, good moms, you know, from Marmy to Igby Goes Down is a huge arc, alcoholic moms, whatever, reluctant moms. Being a woman, I'm about to do something with Pierce Brosnan, which is another way of reacting to loss as a mom. But I don't know. I love women. I love the fact that they're so fragile and so strong, and a lot of them happen to be moms. And, you know, I never felt – I was a mom very late. I think I actually am kind of the patron saint of older ovaries from what I hear from women that I meet, you know, out that are – asking me if they should have kids, you know, after 40.
How old were you, by the way, can I ask?
When I had my first, I was, I think, 39. When I had my third, I was 45.
Wow.
Good to know.
So my last question is related to something we just read about your role in Speed Racer. You were upset they didn't make an action figure of your character. True or not?
Devastated. I mean, you know, I spent the whole beginning
I'm
part
shocked,
of my career
frankly.
Turning down anything that had merchandising, and now all I want is to be on a lunchbox, and they didn't make an action figure. What does that say to young
girls?
I could have a pancake thing, and I make the car, a blowtorch, and a—I mean, that's the modern-day mom.
Oh, you know? Like G.I. Joe, and then the different accoutrements would change out.
Absolutely.
Well, at the risk of pandering, I know a lot of younger mothers who would totally buy their daughters a Susan Sarandon super doll.
And how cute were my outfits and everything.
All right, Susan Sarandon, star of Speed Racer and many, many films. Thanks for coming in, Susan.
My pleasure. Thank you.
He's often flying as he guns a car around the track. He's jamming down the pedal like he's never coming back. Adventure's waiting just ahead. Go, Speed Racer. Go, Speed Racer. Go, Speed Racer. Go!
Coming up on the show, the man who runs one of Afghanistan's most popular morning news radio programs. It's called Good Morning Afghanistan. I talk with him about the challenges of running an independent-minded news operation in that country. This is the Bryant Park Project from NPR News.